Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Well, happy Thursday to you, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Annette Billings, the mayor of Hurricane City,
is here today.
Hi, Annette. Good to see you. Appreciate you coming over. I know you have to make some special arrangements on Thursdays to be here, but I appreciate
it. Good. Happy to be here.
We also have Kurt Yates, who is your police chief at Hurricane City. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. Thank you. Excited to be here also.
Thank you for coming in. Nanette, maybe I'll let you talk about Kurt a little bit. Tell us about him and how long he's been your chief and what you know about him.
So, yeah, new chief since November, doing a fantastic job, has a lot of good things going in Hurricane City. Probably the number one thing is unity. He's really done a good job to work with the officers, help with the morale in having our new sergeants. He's worked on the assignments, so people are learning new assignments, but they've also been able to do overlapping leadership where they've trained, and it's just been a great transition. I'm really grateful for his work and effort in Hurricane City and all of the things that happen within the police department. He's done a great job.
I appreciate that, Mayor. Yeah, it's been great to be able to come in. I've been able to create two lieutenant positions, Lieutenant Hall and Lieutenant Gray, and they have done an awesome job. You surround people around you, they're smarter than you, and no, they've been
I great. Do that all the time.
Yes,
too,
so. they do a great job and very forward thinking, and I'm super excited to have them in place. And also, we got some new sergeants, because our main goal is to get with all our new officers to get some more sergeants out on the streets where there's more supervision. As you know, law enforcement these days, it's getting a little more complicated. No two calls are the same. And so when you have new officers, they need supervision. And so I appreciate the mayor and the city council approving that and being able to have that extra supervision out there to help these new officers so that we can have them performing to the best.
How long have you been on the police force, Kurt?
So I've been with Hurricane City for a little over 17 years now.
Okay.
I've been in law enforcement for 21. I actually started with the Utah Department of Natural Resources. I was a law enforcement ranger out at Sand Hollow. And then one day I got a knock at the door from some admin from Hurricane City.
So you got recruited.
I got recruited. Okay. I worked with them a little bit on the Youth Alcohol Task Force. And so I was working with them. And the more I worked with them, I really enjoyed it and realized what a great police department that Hurricane was and my love for law enforcement. And so I jumped on board. And it's been a great experience.
Nice. And you've been in Hurricane itself over 20 years?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. My wife and I, after we graduated from SUU, we're both from small towns, and we wanted to raise our kids.
By the way, tell them how small.
Yeah. So I grew up in a little town in Mona, Utah.
Mona. Okay.
Yeah. And it's doubled in size since I was a kid.
But that still means how many?
I don't know what it is now, to be honest with you, but it was...
A couple thousand,
yeah,
maybe?
Maybe.
There was only 1,700 and, like, 50 people in Hurricane when I grew up. Yeah. So Mona's, it was that size.
Yeah. Yeah. And so my wife and I, she's from a small town too, and we wanted to raise our kids in a great community like Hurricane, and we've had that opportunity, and it's been a blessing to have both our daughters. My last one just graduated from Hurricane High School, and so, yeah, we've been happy to be able to raise them in such a great community as Hurricane.
Yeah, I guess we're all pretty close to the same. I'm a little older, I think, than both of you, but we're pretty close to the same age. My youngest is 21,
yes.
So about the same. But, you learn a lot of things.
Yes, you do.
One thing I've learned is you have very little control over your adult children. Once they're adults, they make all kinds of weird decisions. You're like, nothing I can do about it.
Yeah. Me and my wife are struggling with that one right now.
It's tough, isn't it? Yeah.
You just can't tell them what to do anymore. That's
right?
A hard one.
Yeah. By the way, personal experience, my son, my number two son, had grown really long hair. And I was, I'm a conservative guy. I didn't really like long hair on guys. I'm like, whatever, But I didn't really say anything because you can't, adult child, you don't really say anything. Well, yesterday my son cut 14 inches off and gave it to
Locks of Love
or one of those that were the hair for children who have cancer or whatever. And it was a proud papa moment, you know. Now he has short hair like we do, Kurt. And he said that was the whole reason behind growing the long hair. And he said he'll probably leave it short for a while and then he'll do it again and donate. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that cool is. Moment. So, again, we're talking about Hurricane City, though, a little bit, talking with Kurt Yates, who is the police chief for Hurricane City. You started out, you were an SRO officer for a while, which is a school resource officer. Right. And how was that experience?
You know, that was probably will be my favorite assignment as a police officer.
Next to being the chief.
Next to being the chief, It's a different, it's a different job.
Yeah. Right.
School resource officers can do great things. They serve so many different roles, but to be able to develop that relationship with the students, I still see them today. I think one of the coolest things, I shared this story not too long ago when I was talking at the post-graduation. I had a kid walk up to me. I was at the gym and said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, I apologize, I don't.
I only knew several thousand of you, but okay.
And so he says, "Well, I want to thank you." And I said, "What for?" And he proceeded to tell me, you know, he was doing some things that he shouldn't, and I had, you know, intervened with that and actually called his parents in. And he said, "You know, at the time, I really didn't like you. I didn't appreciate that you did that to me." But he says, "You know what? That was a changing point in my life. You kind of got me down the... I mean, he did it on his own, but to be able to say that I played a part in that, that's awesome. But I think SROs, they do. They play a big role. They serve different roles. But I think that's where you can build that relationship with the youth, and that's an important thing.
We have great SROs. Yeah. Honestly, I'm so grateful for them. They working in our prevention, they do a great job just with the youth in general.
How many SROs are there in Hurricane right now?
So right now we have three. We have one of the high school, middle school, and then the intermediate school.
Okay. I was always curious the relationship that school resource officers, basically a policeman in the school, you have these relationships with these kids. At some point, though, if a kid keeps making wrong choices, you have to, for lack of a better word, you have to bust them.
Yeah.
Is that hard when you've developed a friendship with these kids to then kind of have to become the law?
It is. But I think if you do it in a way, because you're working closely with the administration, and again, it's an education thing. You try to do everything you can so that you don't have to get to that point.
Right.
But by the time you get to that point, most of the kids realize, hey, you've given me every chance. There's going to be consequences. And so, it is a tough one. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That fine role that you play. But yeah, there's times where you have to be the bad guy. So
yeah,
it's like a parent, though. Love the children,
that's a good point.
And you want to give them the best opportunity, and you see something that needs correction. If you never tell someone that they are messing up, it's hard for them to realize that you don't see it. Like if a kid gets away with things without having some kind of consequence, no one makes changes. And it makes that behavior change because they feel that love. Like, I'm trying to help you. This isn't right.
A lot of my career has been built around sports, and I equate it to a coach. And, you know, for a long time, there was the discipline coach and the player's coach. And somewhere in the last couple of decades, you've kind of had to merge them a little bit. You've got to be their friends and their mentors, but you also have to be the tough guy occasionally.
Yeah, accountability. So
if a guy keeps missing a block on a certain play and you don't tell him about it, how does he know he's doing something wrong, right?
Yeah. So. For sure.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming in. Let's talk a little bit about, and we'll get both of you involved, about traffic, first of all, in Hurricane. I think, Kurt, you told me before we went on the air, can you imagine traffic jams in Hurricane, Utah? I know, Nanette, you've been there a long time.
Yeah.
And you said when you first moved to Hurricane, it had 1,700 people?
I was a child growing up,
and
there were 1,700 people when I was growing up. And I consider anything off of SR9, there's not traffic.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have traffic in Hurricane.
But there's one big road that goes through.
It goes to Sand Hollow. It goes to Sand Mountain. It goes to Quail Lake. It goes to the Gem Trail for bicycle. It goes to Lake Powell. It goes to
Zion.
It goes to the Grand Canyon. It's just people come through our city to go through our city. And so it really is a, there's traffic on us. The awesome thing, maybe you can tell them about the new traffic officer that we're hiring that we just put in our budget because we need a traffic officer. Maybe we talk about that.
Yeah, no, we're super excited. So this year, city council, I appreciate them. They allowed us to approve a traffic car. And so we'll have someone out there that'll be focusing specifically on traffic enforcement. We have a lot of traffic accidents. I haven't looked at the final numbers, but I would guess that our traffic accidents just from last year have doubled, just with the traffic on SR9. And so to have somebody out there doing traffic enforcement, getting people to slow down, you know, I think a big part of our traffic accidents is people that are not paying attention. Cell phones. Paying attention to everything but the road.
Distracted driving.
And yes. So I think that plays a big part in it. Obviously, speed's always going to play a part in it. But people need to pay attention to the road because there's a lot of stop and go. It's not the good old days where you could just go 55 from town onto I-15. Those days are gone. There's a lot of stop and go. And so people need to be attentive to what's on the road and not what's on their cell phone or the radio or whatever else. So
years ago, this would have been back in the late 80s. I was a delivery driver for a produce company, and one of my runs was out to Tooele. And there was this one place in Grantsville on the way to Tooele, where they would make me a burger, a shake, and fries. Yeah. And then I would then have to drive from Grantsville to Tooele, which is like 15, 20 miles. But I remember having a shake in one hand, a burger in the other. I was steering with my knee, and my elbow was keeping the cherry tomatoes from falling. And I can't even imagine you throw a cell phone into that mix. I mean, talk about distracted driving.
Yeah, you see that. You see that a lot.
Yeah.
When you pull up on a traffic accident and you see a spilt malt or food all over the floor, you kind of can
figure out what happened.
Yeah.
How hard is it, though? I mean, we joke about that, but what about the cell phone part? How hard is it to pin the fact that a cell phone was involved, especially if someone's denying it?
Yeah, that is a tough one. We do have to catch them in the act. And people have been honest with this before and said, I'll be honest, I was on my cell phone. I was distracted. And we appreciate that honesty. But yeah, a lot of times it's hard to prove, you know, unless they're willing to allow us to look at their cell phone. But people, we can't just say, hey, let me look at your phone.
Yeah, I want a search warrant, right?
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
I have the right to remain locked.
Exactly.
You know, whatever.
And we do respect the Fourth Amendment, and we're not going to do that unless we had probable cause. So
that seems frustrating to me, because if someone was texting or whatever it was they were doing on their phone, there's someone on the other end who knew what was happening when the accident happened, and yet you guys, you have no access to that. You have no way to find that out, right? Unless there was maybe a fatality, that would be something you might investigate further.
Right. Yeah, or if we have a witness that said, hey, I did see them on the phone, you know, something like that could help us, then we can definitely dive into it a little further.
Mm. You know, and we talk about it, and sometimes you think, nobody's doing that, but that's what a lot of people perceive. But just driving, you know, I drove from Salt Lake to here. Actually, we went to Yellowstone last week, but drove from there to here. I cannot tell you, on the freeway at 85 miles an hour, how many people were looking at their dadgum phone. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you know how fast you're going? You know what would happen if you crash at this speed? Probably death.
Yeah.
You know? And yet they're sitting there doing a crossword puzzle or reading a book or texting. It's amazing to me, Kurt. I can't believe it.
Yeah, no, it is. And you know, the message has been delivered out there that there's no tolerance for that. So if we do see somebody texting and driving, it's not a warning. It's a citation. We you know, it's, you're putting other people's life on the line besides your own. And so, yeah, we have zero tolerance for that. And that will be a big focus with this traffic car. It will be an unmarked car. And so that will be one of the biggest focus, is this distracted driving, because again, I think that's leading to a lot of our accidents.
It really is. So. And you know, a lot of times if you're investigating an accident and there are no brakes, no skid marks, that's because they weren't looking. They didn't slow down because they were distracted.
That's definitely a good point.
Let's go outside of Hurricane proper and go out to that light at, used to be, I guess it's still Purgatory Correctional Facility, but they're calling
where the DMV is?
Yeah. Okay. They're calling it, what is it, Legacy Park now or what? Anyway, has that been a problem traffic-wise? I know it tends to be, especially when there's the fair going on or other stuff going on, a lot of backup there. Has that been an area with traffic problems and accident problems?
Yeah, so probably our biggest two problem well, I'd say three intersections. Definitely the one at 5300 West or the Legacy that you're talking about there, mm-hmm. the DMV.
So you got the Quail Lake going the one way, and you got the Purgatory the other way, and the DMV and the DLD and all that.
Yeah, it's kind of the perfect storm. Also, the intersection at Walmart, 3400 West, that one's a bad one also.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. And then the Y. Or 6300 West. We have always called it the Y there, the Telegraph and Old Highway 91.
Right.
And I think the main issue there is we have a lot of rear-end accidents, but it's because people come up over that hill. And UDOT's done a great job. They have flashing lights letting people know, hey, those lights are getting ready to turn red. But again, distracted driving. And they, you know, it's backed up and somebody rear-ends somebody. And a lot of times it's not just one vehicle. They'll hit a vehicle that hits another vehicle. And so now we have two or three vehicles involved in this. So.
And in town by 1150, but that's probably our biggest one in town, but it's much slower driving there. But there's still, we have accidents there. And we've had a couple of deaths there over the last 10 years. We've had two deaths. People that I that I knew.
So as you're coming into town, it's downhill, and you're going from, what is it, 50 or 55 on SR9, and then you get into town, and it immediately drops to 40, and then eventually lower than that.
Yeah.
Is that a problem? Do people coming into town too fast?
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely have people coming into town fairly quick. The other issue we run into, and it's foreigners, they don't live here locally, and so we get some foreigners.
And you don't mean foreigners from California. You mean foreigners from Europe and
you got Zion. I'm not talking about California. I'm talking about people from
They're
Germany.
They're kind of foreign, too, Kurt.
Germany, Europe, all over Asia.
All the world. And
yes.
So, yeah, we run into a lot of that also, where they're just, but they don't realize the speed limit. You know, they're not paying attention, and they just see a wide open road. So
I was up at Yellowstone, and there was this lady. She was from Japan. I could tell she was from Japan. She only spoke Japanese. There was no English. She was driving an Escalade. Now, if anybody knows anything about Japan, they have very skinny roads, and they have very small cars. And I'm sitting there thinking, this Japanese lady is driving, you know, an Escalade. I mean, this thing is giant. I'm like, how in the world is she even... you know, maneuvering her way through. I don't know. I was just, it boggled my mind a little bit, Kurt.
Yeah. You see some interesting things out on the road, but I'm sure they would say the same thing if we came and traveled in their roads. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right. So well, let's move from traffic now to crime a little bit. Are there some hotspot crime wise in Hurricane that you guys are putting a special focus on, Kurt and Nanette?
Definitely. The one thing that's nice about Hurricane is still crimes of opportunity. You know, we are not to the point now where people are doing smash and grabs. It's those that are not locking their doors on their vehicles, locking their doors on their homes.
So bad, but not, like you said, the real serious stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and so it's more crimes of opportunity. And so I strongly encourage people, you know, it's not the good old days. We used to leave our front door unlocked when I was growing up, because that's how the milkman put the milk in the fridge. Those days are gone.
He would come in and put it in your fridge?
Yeah, he actually put it in the fridge. Yeah, that's how small town. Those days are over.
But that was in Mona.
Was in Mona, yeah. those days are over. You need to lock your doors and make sure that you're keeping them locked. The same on vehicles. And another big issue that I see is, you know, a lot of people carry firearms, and they keep them in their vehicle. Do not keep your firearms in your vehicle. And if you are leaving, you know, for a short time, make sure that your vehicle is locked. Because we see a lot of firearms being taken from vehicles, you know, because people, and, you know, I respect their Second Amendment right, you know, to have firearms, but you need to be a responsible citizen and make sure that you're keeping those secure, because we do a lot of our vehicle burglaries. Guns get taken. It surprises me how many people leave their vehicles unlocked. So
I was talking with St. George Police detectives about this very topic, and one of the things they said, imagine if you just forgot, didn't lock your car, you left your, you know, 38 in the car, and that gun gets used to commit a murder or another very serious violent crime. How would you feel about that?
Yeah.
Pretty bad. Yes. Right? I mean, pretty awful. So, if that's not motivation, I don't know what is. Right,
yeah.
Kurt?
Yeah.
I mean,
no, I agree.
Come on, let's make sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think crimes of opportunity, and when you were talking to the council not very long ago, you were talking about the fact that there's a lot of internet or electronic fraud. My mom actually had someone call her, told her that she'd won the Publisher's Clearinghouse, that she needed to set up a Chime account. They helped her do that. They took $2,500 out of her account. Yes.
Yeah.
It's just happened. That was just a few weeks ago, three.
So
it's not a long time ago. This is recent.
Yes.
Walk us through that a little bit, Kurt. What happens if there is that kind of of fraud committed. I mean, just recently I got a text saying you owe money to the DMV, and I know St. George Police said they've had people calling impersonating officers and saying you need to pay, we're going to have a warrant out. How do local police like you investigate something like that when it's maybe something that's not necessarily local?
And you nailed it right on the head. It's not necessarily local, and that is the hardest part, because a lot of these crimes, our suspect is in Nigeria. Mm. You know, was in a whole other country.
Another country.
And so those are some of the hardest ones. You know, we put all the resources that we can into it. That's a good amount of time that our detectives are spending. You know, the wave of the future of crime is online. Yeah. That's exactly where it's taking place. And so we're spending a lot of time. But yeah, fraud, unfortunately, they like to target the elderly. Mm-hmm. They're trusting. And so, you know, they get that phone call of, your grandson's in jail, you need to send.
My mom got one of those, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that we're super lucky, again, Hurricane's still small enough, is you'll get these elderly people, they'll go to the credit union and be like, I need to draw out $10,000, and the tellers are going, wait a minute, why do you need to draw? I'm not to talk about it. And they've called us before and said,
So the bank clerks are smart enough to pick up on that, and that's good.
Yeah, and so we've had some stop that way. That doesn't happen all the time, but they've been trained also, and we really appreciate the banks. And that's another great part about living in a small community, is a lot of times they know the elderly, and they're like, you know that you shouldn't be pulling out $10,000. What's going on here? And so
my husband's an investment advisor, and one of his clients came in, and she went to the bank and took out $29,000 because they called and told her, and she actually went to Walmart and was sending the money, and so a Walmart clerk had asked something, and they said, well, do you know the person? They asked that question, do you know them? And she said, well, it's going to my grandson because he's in jail. And she goes, but do you know who you're sending this to? And she said, no. She goes, then let's do a little bit more research and find out. Because she almost sent that $29,000 to someone she didn't even know, would never see it again. And probably one of the bigger things that's happening right now is AI can generate your voice to make it sound like. So when people call, somebody had called my mom and said, Grandma, and she says, oh, who are you? And which grandchild? Oh, yeah, you know. And then she said one of their names. Oh, yeah. And so they can generate kids' voices, people, and so you think it's the person you're talking to. So we really need to have passwords. You need to say, hey, if we ever have an issue with money, you're going to know that if I don't say Mickey Mouse, then that's our password or whatever it is. So
good
you
idea,
have
man.
Something
yeah. really
because
good idea.
Honestly, it can be really a problem, and you can be there's people that have lost their life savings over people that have frauded them.
Wow.
Really be like living with our eyes open.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's you're spot on right there, Mayor. And one thing that we've tried to do is we've had our detectives go out to like the senior citizen when they have events and educate them and let them know, hey, these are things that you need to be watching for. But we're never going to call you and tell you that we're coming to arrest you. That's not how it works. So if you get that phone call, it's a fraud.
Yeah. We were talking about the Forsyth fire the other day, and they said, you know what, there's going to be scammers. There's going to be people say, oh, I'm raising money to help the victims that lost their homes or whatever, and there's going to be people out there. Unfortunately, the worst of humanity comes out sometimes when we have tragedies.
So true.
All right, let's get a commercial break in. We're talking with Kurt Yates. He's the chief of police with Hurricane City and the mayor on Mayor Thursday. Mayor Nanette Billings. Mayor, thanks for coming in. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
I did want to do a quick update on the Forsyth fire. It is now near 10,000 acres with 5% containment. Now, that containment number is kind of a weird one. They're actually focusing on making sure that they protect buildings so structures don't burn. But they have evacuated Pine Valley, Grass Valley, and now Gray's Ranch. I'm not familiar exactly with where that is, but those three places have been evacuated. Pinto has not technically been evacuated yet. They're in the, so you have ready, set, go. They're in the set phase, which means be ready to evacuate at a moment's notice. They are also have a containment line set up near Lloyd Canyon. Also, I'm not super familiar with Pine Valley myself. Maybe you guys have cabins up there or something, but I don't know.
So. Co-op. We go to Co-op.
Okay.
I've hunted on Pine Valley. It's so sad because they haven't. So you can either log it, you can either graze it, or you can let it burn.
Yeah.
That's 100%. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
And true. We haven't logged it or grazed it.
We haven't.
The wilderness area started probably 25 years ago, and that's why we're going to just let it burn now.
And Zach Renstrom was telling me yesterday, the water guy, he said it actually will change the pH balance of the water that flows down to St. George. He says, you think the fire doesn't affect us?
It does.
In St. George, it really does.
Yeah.
And everywhere in this valley is going to be affected by that fire. And, of course, there could be flooding because of the burning, if they get the fire out, which is still a long ways away from that as well. So, no fires. I guess there was a house fire in Hurricane the other day. Yeah, you were probably there, or your guys were there as part of that, Chief Yates. But they were able to knock it down pretty quick, like within an hour.
Right? Yes, yeah. They
sounds like he was just doing a rebuild, and he screwed into a wire that caught on fire.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I hate when that. Why didn't they turn the power off, I guess my question is. I'm just saying.
You're just saying a good thing.
Yeah.
Saying a good question.
Yeah. We had a guy do ceiling fans in our house. Never turn the power off. You go, I know what I'm doing. I got this taken care of. And I'm like, so if you electrocute yourself and die in my house, am I liable then? Because I told you to turn the power off and you didn't. I don't know what the answer to that is. But one of the areas in law enforcement that is a little distasteful to talk about, Kurt, but I think probably needs to be talked about is crimes against children. There's a task force called the ICAC, the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. Tell us how Hurricane fits in with that.
So we just recently put one of our detectives on that, and that has been a huge resource. He's already done some great work. And, yeah, it's sad what's going on. These sexual predators are using the Internet to target our youth. And to have him on there and the training that he's had, we've been able to find a few within our community, and we'll continue to do that and get them out of our community where they need to belong. Because, yeah, it's sad. And, I mean, these people are traveling from different states to come meet with our youth. And they're good. They know the grooming techniques to win these kids and get them to do compromising things. And, yeah, so we are super glad to have a detective on ICAT, and we hope in the future to add others.
It like I said, it is distasteful, but when you think about what's at stake, these guys, these predators, as you call them, which I think they are, to them it's just the thrill of the hunt and getting whatever thrill out of it. But it affects when this happens to a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, an 11-year-old, a 14-year-old, it affects them for the rest of their lives. This is a scar on them that will never go away.
That's a very good point. Yeah, it does. It's a lifetime. They're victims, and it's a hard thing, with the counseling and everything that goes into that. It can have a lifetime impact on them, and it's very unfortunate. So
I had, sadly, I had a friend of mine who was molested when she was, I think, 11.
Yes.
And, at the time she was in her 40s, and it was still part of who she was. It was still in the back of her mind. Yeah. It never went away. So very sad.
To make just a small comment on that, we're very lucky here in Washington County with the way we have it set up. We have the Children's Justice Center, and the way they handle things now, and they do it in a safe environment where these kids feel safe to finally speak out, because you can imagine how hard it is for them to disclose these things, and a lot of times it's family members.
Right.
But part of that also is they get him into counseling, and it doesn't stop there. There's so many different resources. So we've come a long ways in law enforcement that when this does happen, that we make sure these victims are taken care of properly.
And it's important to address it sooner than later, than waiting until they're 40 years old. Like actually when they're 5 and 11 and those ages, because it really helps them to work through that process that and have the therapist help them and move forward in their lives. So it's so it's traumatic.
Well, this friend of mine who had been molested, it was by a family member, and she held it in for 10, 15 years, didn't tell anybody. And when she finally told somebody, a few of her family members were like, "Nah, you're lying.
Yeah.
No, that didn't happen."
Yeah.
And, imagine you finally get the courage to say, "This is what happened to me." And then you got a few people saying, "Nah, you're lying."
Yep.
I can't even imagine the pain and frustration.
So
that is very common, too. You bring up a very good point. And that's, I think we've learned some different techniques and things to prevent that, to stop that from happening. But it does still happen. And it is. It's tough because a lot of the time it is family members. And so it puts that child or that victim in a bad spot.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Let's change topics a little bit. As chief of police, what is your, you know, I talked about a discipline coach. I talked about, you know, a player's coach, as they used to call them. As chief of police, what kind of coach are you? Are you a player's coach or are you a discipline coach? Or are you a little bit of both? How does that fit in for you? And then talk about maybe your relationship with the city leadership.
Yeah, I would love to talk about that. So yes, my leadership, I still like to try to be a part of the team. You know, it wasn't too long ago that I was working the streets, and so right. It makes it a little easier to, you know, I remember how it was to be them, and so, you know, I try to work with them. We all make mistakes. Being a police officer is a tough job.
Yeah, because you're supposed to be perfect.
You're supposed to be perfect, yeah. and all eyes are on you. I mean, when I first started in law enforcement, we didn't wear body cameras. And now we do. And, you know, at first I thought, man, this is terrible. But now it's a great thing. It protects us. And we're very transparent. But
yeah, with the body camera, there's two ways to look at it.
Yeah,
it's recording everything you do, good or bad, and that could be that. But at the same time, it also, you have someone claim something, you go, well, actually, I have video of the exact opposite. Yeah. So it helps.
Yeah. Back to my leadership, I want to be a very transparent. I try to keep my officers in the know as much as possible about what's going on, mm-hmm. and that they're supported and they know they have that support. You know, the biggest issue we're facing, and I'm sure you've heard this from every chief sheriff that's come in here, is retaining officers and getting good officers. And this is where I want to bring in our mayor right here and also our city council. They just recently did us a big one, and I sincerely appreciate it. It's competitive out there with wages. You know, we have to compete with St. George. We have to compete with Washington City. And the raises, you know, the wages keep coming up. And they recently just raised our wages, you know, to a point that we are now comparable. And I really appreciate that mayor and the city council. And they do back the blue. I see people online saying that they don't, they do. And I very much appreciate, you know, the other night Kevin Thomas said, you know, when they were approving the budget, they said, these officers deserve this. You know, he's like, they put their lives on the line every day, and I appreciate that they recognize that. Mm-hmm. And, we have a very supportive city council and a mayor and city manager also. He recognizes it and recognizes the need. And, you know, it's easy to focus just on the police department, but there's many different departments, too, that they've got to pay them also, and we recognize that. And that money's got to go everywhere. And so, you know, we appreciate what they've done for us this year.
We were looking at the budget before we approved it, and talking about the difference between police and some of the other departments. And our city council has definitely, especially since I've been there since 2019 is when I was elected, in 2020, so the last 5 years, we have moved. It's almost 50% in increase that we've given to our police in the last 5 years that I've been there.
Yeah.
That's significant. That's it's almost 50%. So that is a huge increase. And we recognize we need to be competitive. We also recognize that they deserve it. We also recognize that they have the hardest job of anyone, that they're having to do things that no one else is signing up to do. And you pay people for doing things that no one else signs up to do. And we are supportive because we want safe roads and safe neighborhoods and have no crime and all of the things that we enjoy. And that's what makes our small town amazing, small town charm, because we have the feeling of safety and helping each other and being there. So I'm just really grateful.
Would you say there was a time 5, 10, 20, whatever years ago that Hurricane kind of got the leftovers, like you had UHP and you had St. George City?
I don't know if we did. I mean, we had good officers before.
Right.
I don't know that we had leftovers, because I'm going to say the people that chose to come, like Kurt Yates, he was at the Sand Hollow area working with the DNR. But I'm just going to say we have good people working. Like our lieutenants, they've been there for a while and they're good. Yeah. Like Travis Hall's been with us for 19 years and he's a great officer. So I don't know. I think we just have good people. I'm really grateful.
You know, and you'll find that it's a whole lot cheaper to retain officers than to keep training them. And that's the key thing, is to be able to hang. Because honestly, for an officer to get to a point where they're completely competent, it takes 3 years. I mean, because every call we go to is a little different.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, you talk about a tough job. And so we want the best. We want them well trained. And it's tough. tough when we get one trained and then he goes somewhere else. And that's happened to us. And so that, you know, with this recent wage increase, we hope to prevent that because it is, it's tough. And, you know, we've had some good officers leave us and, you know, they've teased us that, you know, Hurricane City has good officers and, you know, they've gone to St. George and Washington City. But yeah, we're super excited with this current wage increase. And I think that's going to help us dramatically.
And my guess is culture is a part of that too. Do you want to be here? Do you like where you work? Do you like Hurricane City itself? Yeah. It's not just the money. It's other stuff too.
100%.
It is. And that's a key thing we focus on too, is quality of life. Being a police officer is difficult. And so when they have downtime, it's important that they have that downtime. And so we try to make their schedules as accommodating, work with them that they can spend the family time they need and get that break time away from the job. Because if you don't get that, it can take a toll on your mental health.
Yeah.
And so that's something that we've really been focusing on lately is making a schedule that's more compatible to each of their lives. And, you know, it's hard because you work a rotating shift. You know, you work day, you work grave, you work nights. And so we're trying to make that as easy as possible and an easy transition.
Well, and a lot of times people do more for recognition than they do for money. I mean, yeah. That sounds crazy because people are there to support their families and make money. But they will do more on their job because they're recognized. And I really have seen how Chief has recognized officers and given them the credit for the good they're doing and recognizing all of their talents and abilities and how they've really taken care of a situation, even when they've had some training that they thought were maybe real with the, I mean, I say when you guys went in into the middle school. No, it was high school.
Yeah.
It was the high school for that one. And thinking that here you're having a bomb squad that you're having to train and not knowing it's not real, but the good work that they did, and what a great opportunity to have that. But anyway, they're just doing a great job.
I have my daughter-in-law's dad is a police chief up in the Salt Lake area, and he went on vacation one time. He is bald as can be, and he has a mustache. And he went on vacation one time, and one of the people on the cruise said, "Oh, you're a police chief, aren't you?" And he's like, "How in the world could you possibly know that?" And he said, "Well, every police chief I've ever known had a bald head and a mustache. Now, Kurt neither has a mustache nor a bald head, so you don't fit in with that, Kurt."
Give me time. My hair's turning gray really quick. My guys pointed that out to me the other day. So
yeah, that happens. I think it's more the kids than the job that makes their hair turn gray.
Yeah, it's true.
Got a quick commercial break. Be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Talking Hurricane City today, Mayor Nanette Billings is here. Hi, Nanette.
Thanks for having us.
And Police Chief Kurt Yates is here as well. He's the best, apparently, according to Nanette. Way to go, Kurt. That's pretty awesome. A couple of programs. One of them you want to talk about in particular. I know it's only June. School doesn't start for a couple of months, but you guys have a special program.
Yeah, so it's a program that our previous chief, Lynn Excel, started a few years ago. It's the Back to School. So, you know, you've heard of Shop with a Cop.
Right.
The Back to School. So these are for kids that are in need. We take them shopping, get them school clothes, shoes, backpacks, those school supplies that they need. And so if you are attending a Hurricane school and you're interested in that, please reach out to the police department because we would love to get your name and have you be a part of that. It will be, I believe we're doing it August 9th. It'll be on a Saturday, but we go shop at Kohl's in Washington City. Kohl's works with us. They give us some great discounts. You know about Kohl's Cash and all. We get to use that too. But it's really neat because some of these kids that probably wouldn't have had a chance to have some new clothes and new shoes for that first day of school. You remember how important that was. Mm-hmm. At least it was for me. That it gives them the opportunity to start out the school year right and to have new clothes and have them feel good about themselves. So
they can go to the police department and sign up, or they can call.
Yep.
Okay. Put them awesome. On the list.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And if you're interested in donating, we'll take donations too because that's where that money comes from. And so
I talked to someone yesterday and told me he was going to give $10,000.
Well, that's
so
awesome.
I'll send it over to you. I know he said, he goes, he'd actually talked to someone in the community that said they didn't have stuff. And he goes, I'm going to go help. And I said, that's
awesome.
And then also, they can, if you want to donate or if you know someone in need at Christmas time, we do this again, Shop with a Cop, and it's for Christmas. So yeah, really good thing. I've very actually cool. gone, that one's at Walmart instead of Kohl's, but I've gone with these kids and you see the type of things that they grab. They're grabbing toothbrushes. They're grabbing deodorant. One kid I was talking to and he goes, my mom told me I'm starting to smell. Do you think I could get some deodorant? I said, absolutely. If you don't have enough money, I will pay for your deodorant. Yeah. Yeah.
And kudos, because a lot of kids at 12, 13, 14, yeah, boys especially, don't notice that kind of thing.
This kid was like 9, but yeah, I was like, wow, I guess if you're starting to smell, yes, you should get deodorant.
That's really cool. Real quick, Chief, if you will kind of go over what the kind of the breadth of Hurricane Police Department, what kind of officers and departments do you have? We're down to like 4 or 5 minutes. So
right now, we talked about the school resource. We have our detectives, our school resource officers, lieutenants, and then all together we have 38 sworn.
38 officers.
So, yeah.
Is that full-time?
Animal control.
Yes. Don't forget animal control, school crossing. Yes. So they all play a part and they pay a big
You even have a canine officer and dog.
Canine
right?
officer, yeah. Yes. And he has been awesome. He actually was a canine officer with another agency and we were super lucky to pick him up and he has been great. When we promoted our Sergeant Omar Torres, he was our previous canine handler. We took that dog and gave it to our new canine officer.
What's the dog's name, by the way?
G.
G. Yeah. G-E-E, right?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. I think I've seen a picture of G.
And we're pretty lucky. The people that are internally within the police department that are helping with redacting and grammar requests. Yes. And, man, we've got a good staff there making sure that when they bring in some type of, what's the...
grammar requests.
Yeah, but like... after you've gone on a case and you have to bring in all of the evidence, everything.
Stuff, yeah.
I mean, we have got good people on it. They're so organized. I went in there and it is amazing how they are taking care of all the citizens to make sure that it's working. It's awesome.
And a quick shout out to the court clerks,
yes,
too.
Yep.
They
oh, yes,
do a really the great job. My wife was, yeah, a court clerk for 25 years, yes, so I know all about that.
They're doing a good job.
Yeah.
And we have a new prosecutor, and it's been working. We've got some good things going.
Yeah, great things.
To make sure they're taking care of people.
Absolutely. And yeah, records plays a big part because, yes, if they don't do their job, it, you know, all the hard work that we put in, they do that finishing touch, and,
yeah,
and we rely on them heavily and they do a lot. And I want to give a shout out to our evidence techs.
Yes.
They have done a fantastic job with our evidence because there is constantly evidence coming in. And right now we're in an older building and hopefully here in the future we'll get a new police station, but they have done the best with what we have and kept it very organized and,
nice,
and just really come in and done some great things.
Take 1 second, Chief, and explain why we need a new building. Sometimes the public doesn't know that.
And we have 2 minutes.
Two minutes. I'm going to make this quick. So we are in great need of a new police department. Right now we're in the old IHC building. It was never meant to be a police station. It's the safety is a main concern. We're bringing our prisoners in the same door that our civilians are coming in that work for us. And so it's not safe. We're also out of space. You know, all our office space is now up. And so we're very crowded. Our evidence room, we're out of space. We are literally busting at the seams. It's an older building. But more than anything, it's security. We should have a secured parking lot. We should be able to bring our prisoners into a secure sally port. We don't have any of that.
Well, he told me somebody, he had arrested him. The dad was following him and ready to fight him when he pulled into the parking lot at the police station. He has, right, to bring him in the same place that the dad's coming in. It's just we need some upgrades.
Yeah. And we're out of parking.
Yeah.
We have nowhere to park. And right now, Interstate's building a new entertainment center, the Coral Cliff Entertainment Center, which is going to be awesome. It's directly behind us. But our parking lot's going to be the access road to that. And so we are just running out of space.
Yeah,
yeah. We are in great need of a new building.
All right. So you heard it. So how would that come about, Mayor?
We're working on it.
Okay.
We've got new property and we're working on new civic center design. We're working on our police design for the police station and its funding. We're just figuring out how to fund it. And we put some money in our budget to start making a payment for the police department because we're going to have to build a new building right away.
Yeah,
yeah.
Hurricane is growing.
Yep.
And
yep,
with the growth, you need infrastructure and you need police and fire.
Yeah.
Obviously.
We've just had a lot of, our meetings have been focused on the Civic Center. We've engaged our community with surveys and meetings. It's going to be a really good event. I mean, a really good event place for that center for our community.
By the way, primary elections coming, and we're out of time. Sorry about that, folks. But, primary elections are coming up in
August 12th.
Okay. And Nanette has three challengers. And so the primary will cut it down to two. And then hopefully you'll be around for the general election in November. And you're the incumbent. Yeah. So, and we will actually, on the Annie Griffin Show, we will have a focus on all the mayor races around and city council races as well. And we're looking forward to being a part of it. So, guys, thanks for coming on. Kurt and Nanette, really
Thank
appreciate you,
you
guys
Thank
for
you.
Being
appreciate
here.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
We're out of time. We better go to news before I get in trouble.